Hello and welcome to another special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe, and it's my delight to welcome you on behalf of my co-host, Emeka Onyagwa. In today's special episode, we're going to be looking at Peter Obi's recent interview with CNN. In that interview, CNN focused particularly on Obi's support base in young Nigerians. In this episode, we're going to be looking at what we learned from the CNN interview, and particularly developments in Peter Obi's really exciting and unusual campaign for the Nigerian presidency. You're very welcome.
Great interview.
I did. And I don't know what I was expecting, because in a lot of ways, I was worrying about that interview because, you know, as you know, they had scheduled it and it was postponed once or twice. And so I was actually wondering if CNN was sort of pulling away from doing the interview, or whether it was the Obi's camp that was dithering. But ultimately, that interview held last week. On the whole, I would say that Peter Obi gave a good account of himself. And I'm going to get into why I think that is and what he said that particularly resonated with me. But what struck me most powerfully was CNN's focus on Obi's support base in young Nigerians. So here is this young woman. I think her name is Wayimi Lube, who articulated in a very powerful way, I thought, the meaning of Obi's presidency or of Obi's presidential run for young people. I'm sure that you also watched the interview, so I'd like to hear your initial take.
Oh yeah, I think it was a well-prepared interview for sure. I have in part of my life, I would prepare people that had a public profile for stuff like that, interviews, exactly like that. So I think it was well prepared. Most likely, he has a team at this point in time, and either they have which, you know, maybe in America you have like an in-house team, media, which eventually, if you win, they transition to your media and communications team. But they might have a contractual basis with maybe some public relations firms who would come in when they need them. But clearly was well prepared. When you have things like that, the point is they get to the media house, whether it's print or video, or they get there, you know, they set the boundaries if anything is needed, you know, they'll tell you, okay, this is what we want to talk about. You guys reach an agreement. What the media house would decide what is important for them to talk about. You decide if you want to talk about anything. Some candidates, some people talk about anything, and then you guys reach a consensus. Sometimes it's the easiest thing in the world because some people don't care. They're like, ask me any questions. I'm going to answer any questions. After all, in a campaign like this, really, you should expect certain questions, right? He came in and he was prepared. Like, we talked about the stuff people love to try to hang over Obi, which doesn't stick, the Pandora Papers. I'm not saying, I'm just stating the obvious.
Well, not, you know. In a sense, it doesn't stick because I think that his support base is, in a lot of ways, indifferent to that issue. I think that ultimately OB has to give some explanation about that, because I think that as a public official, I don't believe that he was supposed to be conducting business. So if his appearance on the Pandora Papers represents a legitimate engagement in business, he'd have to make that case. You know, so this, I note that the CNN interviewer in the preamble to the interview mentioned that, but she never asked to be a question about it. So that was curious for me. But as you said, something that I think is quite important, that I've often been critical of OB for two things. One is for, you know, the interview that I did with Rudolph Okonkwo, where I said that OB was running the most intellectually vibrant campaign of the three major political candidates. But I also said that he had a tendency to overpromise. And I caught grief from that, from his supporters, because I think that OB is particularly unlucky in his supporters in that sense, you know, that it's as if his supporters insist that we must declare that a saint is running for the presidency. And it behooves us to continue to state that no Nigerian politician is a saint. Indeed, hardly do you find a saint in the ranks of politicians anywhere in the world. Occasionally, you might find one or two people who are more suited, if you like, to a kind of ecclesiastical, priestly vocation than the vocation of politics, who are nevertheless in politics. But no, OB is not a saint by any stretch. But it can be said that he's running a vibrant campaign that is engaging with issues, and that it's a breath of fresh air, because what you get in Nigeria often is politicians using tired, trite, cliched phraseology like, I'm running to move the nation forward, whether they are moving the nation forward into a ditch, into a precipice, into a chasm, you know. So that whole laziness, or some of them will say, I'm running to carry everybody, you know, to carry everybody along, you know, which is a often eulogism for, I'm running to share money amongst my fellow cohort of thieves, really. And so B is talking about the issues. He's talking about issues of production, of power, of corruption, of diversifying the economy, and so on. So, and one of the things that I noted about his recent interview, in addition to now speaking prudently and to of speaking in measured terms, I think that Obi also spoke with particular discipline. Obi is often known for his loquaciousness, you know, that, you know, you ask him a question and he starts telling so many stories and he goes off point. But there was a certain discipline and a certain focus with which he spoke in the CNN interview. Of course, we know that the CNN must have edited that interview as well. But I think Obi gave a good account of himself during that interview. But I think that he's still going to be tested. And my expectation, my hope, is that having featured Obi in such a high-profile, highly anticipated interview, that CNN should extend the same courtesy to the two other major candidates to also come on the show. And who knows whether they will accept. So it says something. It's to Obi's credit that he did accept. And we will hope that Atiku and Tinubu if an invitation is extended to them. And I think that definitely CNN should extend invitations to them, that they would come and also look at Nigerians and the world and state what their own presidency, should they win, would look like.
I'm pretty sure that CNN would have already probably extended that invitation for sure. I have no doubt about that. But a guy like Atiku would be more interested in the way the media landscape works, right? Part of what I was describing earlier is he's probably more interested in doing multiple interviews with VOA ALSA, BBC ALSA service. Without a doubt, that is something that I'm pretty sure even as at today and even as at tomorrow will be the most effective means for him. In terms of Tinubu, he best of my knowledge, I think he's fully hired a public relations firm because they have all these billboards in New York, London, you know, all kinds of places. So
Tinubu has billboards in New York.
Yes, he has billboards. He has
In public spaces.
In public spaces, I didn't see the big ones on the distance. I saw the ones that move around. So they hired those the mounts at the back of a truck, and then they drive it around the city. London,
that's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially as Nigerians in the diaspora still don't have voting rights in Nigeria. So it's rather peculiar in my view that you'd be running such a visual campaign on the streets of New York City, which is not. I mean, of course, there are lots of Nigerians in New York and in all the major cities in this country, but if you put billboards or posters on the backs of trucks and they drive around a city, it seems to me to be a very, very weird way for you to try to send any message at all. I mean, that's really strange for me. I know that that's not the subject of our conversation today, that ultimately we want to return to Obi's interview on CNN and what all of that means.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, but that's Tinubu's style. I've always known Atiku to be a guy that would also hire foreign consultants. Actually, Atiku hires very serious. I think at one point in time, David Axelrod was actually working for him. Mm-hmm. I know Axelrod was working on the Nigerian political campaign mm-hmm. in his last period. So they come in with heavy hitters. They try to dress it up, look good. But, you know, you can only look so good. If you have to do, even in a pre-scripted to some degree CNN interview, where you know the questions, you know the exact questions. Most of the time, the way these things work is they're not going to necessarily give you the exact question. They're going to tell you.
But they say we're going to discuss these issues. Yeah.
Is mm-hmm. that okay with you? Great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So whichever way the question itself is something you're not going to be, you know. And they probably edited some things. I don't know what the full edits were, but there was message discipline, which showed mm-hmm. a guy that, you know, if he were somebody I was, above in my distance, it's working for, and in some ways, you mm-hmm. know, yeah, if somebody that I was working for, that was under my distance, you know, you'd sit down, you put the cameras, you direct, you know, your best angles, down to your best angles of turning and where you answer certain questions. So it was something he looked like he had practiced some level of message discipline, which served him well.
Yeah, he did come. He did come prepared, it seemed. And I thought that the questions were not the most difficult questions, but they were very interesting questions. They were appropriate questions to ask. They were actually challenging questions on some level, because the CNN Zain Asha has to be, you know, that Nigeria is pretty much bankrupt, okay? And that the country is just racked by insecurity and so on, and said to Obi, so how are you going to make, how is one man like you going to make a difference? And Obi was quite measured in indicating that the primary, the central challenge will be focusing on security. There's nothing else you can do in a country that is riddled with violence, where Boko Haram and the Islamic State of West Africa province, ISWAP, and then herdsmen and unknown gunmen sort of have command of the space, where major politicians are now attacked routinely, police officers are killed, military officers are killed. There's very little you can do in such a space, right, in terms of investment, okay? Even in terms of infrastructural development, until you solve the question of insecurity. And it was interesting to hear Obi sort of systematically analyze that situation and, you know, showed an awareness that this was the way to go.
Yeah. I mean, it made sense. The main takeaway which you read about that was one, was message discipline. Two, anybody that had any doubts that, this is a continuation of the NSAS movement, which it's always been there. You can see Shoray that feels like, knowing Shoray from a mini distance, you can put it out for me, you know him a lot better. He said it before, this is not some new thing I'm saying. He feels like he is the mantle of NSAS movement. Like, you know, if anybody's running and that movement should be attached to any candidate, it should be him. That's the way he feels. But, you know, you could say what you want all day long. Just like during NSAS, a whole bunch of people came out and claimed the movement. Some said one guy said he had written down the hashtags in his house 4 years ago and prayed over it, according to him. according to this guy. You know? So I'm just saying what this guy was. And that was the guy that went behind to start negotiating and said, look, man, this is his movement and not for, and that's the key point. This is the guy that went behind and started, like, this is his and not for these youths. This guy is a man that is 60, But, you know, it's just very, very, so it's very similar to Shoray. Shoray feels also. But the reality of pointing all these actors, and there are many of them, it's not just these two, who see, not a private thing, it's not a conversation that I had privately with these guys. It's what they went out there and put out by themselves. So who feel, but the youths don't feel, the youth never felt that way about those guys then, in terms of NSAS. A lot of people have tried to take the mantle. Oh, you know, they're the voice of NSAS in Lekki Tollgate or whatever, you know. But you feel this way. People feel this way. It's a very organic thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have. Somebody was saying, I've forgotten where I was listening, I think this today or so. And the person was echoing, saying exactly what, you know, guys older than me was saying something about. Yeah, this is the first time in his life that he has seen in Nigeria. He's Nigerian. This is the first time he has seen a political campaign where the citizens of the country are investing their own money and time into the campaign.
Yeah.
Not one person. It's not two. These are people that don't know him, are not going to personally benefit from maybe a contract or something. You have people that walk up to him and are like, look, man, I have, I mean, you've seen videos. I have 20,000 I save, Naira, I have whatever amount. Please take it, run your campaign. We want you to win. We want the country to be better because everybody can run away from the country. Everybody can leave countries. 200 million people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a feasible idea. Mm-hmm. 200 million people. Even if you drop the nuclear bomb.
Up and run, yeah. Yeah.
So,
but, you know, so. The point, you know, which is the point you just made about NSAS and how in a lot of ways, which is for me the most exciting, illuminating aspect of the interview with CNN, Obi's interview with CNN, is the build up to that interview where a CNN correspondent spoke to this woman, this young woman, Lube, who quite brilliantly, quite eloquently explained the relationship between Obi's campaign and the NSAS movement. If you remember, in a lot of ways, I think that our podcast has been particularly prophetic in this respect. If you remember, in our early days, we were stating clearly that young people should take charge of 2023. And we said that this was about them, okay? And we also proposed that they should take that energy, that passion, that vital force that they unleashed in October of 2020 to push the NSAS movement and bring all of that into the kind of political choices that they will make in 2023, in next year's general elections. And I somehow felt, first of all, I was taken by surprise by NSAS, right? It was an altogether youth-conceived, youth-run, youth-managed event, okay? They raised the funds. They mobilized themselves for the campaigns. They fed the hungry. They succored the sick. They picked up after themselves. They wrote their press releases. They held press conferences. They were very disciplined in stating what their demands were, right? And it was a very heartening for me, a very heartening moment in Nigeria that had not been seen since perhaps the June 12th movement, which was a different kind of movement. And so I anticipated and hoped that the young people would reignite that energy and bring it to bear on the 2023 elections. I actually was proposing that they should come out, young people, the youngest person possible should come out to run for the presidency, and young people should rally around such a person. I think that Obi, in a sense, became both a fortunate and in some ways natural beneficiary of that movement, became that for several reasons. One was that during his governorship and after, Obi, in numerous speeches, gave the impression of somebody who was thinking of the nature of the crisis in Nigeria. Okay, so he always talked about the different problems in Nigeria and proposed some of the solutions that he's again revisiting during this current incarnation of his political odyssey. But I don't know, I mean, I want to speak a little more about that young woman who was also interviewed by CNN, because I think that her insights were even, for me, far more impressive than ultimately Obi's equally impressive outing during the interview.
Yeah. It's a professional network, CNN, well done piece, as you know, when they want to do their jobs, which they went out, they found a good person to put on camera, which she is. I didn't check the name very well, but it might not even be Yoruba, I don't know. But
I suspect she might be Niger Delta. That's my suspicion.
She might be one of the ethnic groups that it could be. And I think the brilliance of it also, even in the interview, was the fact that you see Zane Asha, who did the interview, is Chiwetel Ejiofor's younger sister, who their parents are Nigerians. And they allude to that and all that. She talks of, and then talks about supporting in the north and how, all those things. And essentially it ties down to it, like, you're not happy, they're not happy too, there's no land, there's no security, people can't go to farm. Tells you that reality, doesn't matter where you're from, that a lot of people are supporting the movement. I've heard people be like, yeah, we're supposed to support Peter Obi because we feel we have to, but even while they're supporting, they're like threatening Igbo people, like, yeah, Igbos, blah blah blah. So they will generalize it that way. Mm-hmm. Which is very, and it's the so-called elites that will be doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's this. I want to read part of what this young woman said, Wayimi Lube. Mm-hmm. So she is part of a youth group that's fishing votes for Peter Obi. Give me a second. Let me bring it up. So she said, the obedient movement is pretty simple, Lube said in a very self-assured manner. We're just a group of frustrated Nigerians who want good governance. It's as simple as that. And we're running for the presidency. Each and every one of us in the obedient movement is running for the presidency through Peter Obi. Okay? So this is very interesting. We're running for the presidency through Peter Obi. Then she continues, NSAS was the catalyst that started all of this. Okay? NSAS was the catalyst that started all of this. So, of course, for those of you watching us who may not be Nigerians, in October of 2020, there were a number of very strong protests staged in numerous Nigerian cities, protesting against police brutality. NSAS stands for putting an end to a police unit called the Special Anti-Robbery Squad. Mm-hmm. This unit was established in 1992 to combat the scourge of violent crime, especially armed robbery in Nigeria. But as often happens in our country, the members, the so-called law enforcement agents, quickly turned into criminals of the worst order. They would brutalize innocent citizens. They would even engage in numerous cases extrajudicial execution of suspects. And so in October of 2020, Nigerian youth staged protests that really swept through the country, was present in the major cities of that country. The Nigerian president, Muhammadu Buhari, was forced to promise to basically decommission the SARS. But the students or the youth who organized these protests wanted more political reforms to follow. In response, the government ultimately, toward the end of October, unleashed military force on the protesters, killing a yet-to-be-determined number of them and wounding many of them. And so this sort of temporarily put an end to what was a shining moment where Nigerian youth showed themselves in the most admirable and impressive light. And so this young woman, Lube, is suggesting that the support for Obi mirrors the same momentum that these youth had brought in 2020 in asking and, in fact, agitating for a better Nigeria.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, when you have, and it's more dire because of the situation in the country. I was drawing the differences in terms of, I was talking to somebody the other day, and we're talking about Indians and this thing celebrated their Pakistanis celebrated their independence, and you could contrast with two nations. India, not necessarily a first world power, but it's a country. It's a this thing, you know, and Pakistan is a failed country, just like Nigeria. So in the same breath, I would say you have a situation where Nigeria is literally done for at this point in time. Everything is upside down, you name it. And it didn't start today. It's been even before independence, long before, actually. But the continuation of that, you have that situation. I was listening to somebody say, look, the only thing holding Nigeria together is the foreign remittances. Not foreign direct investments, foreign remittances. Yeah. By most accounts, foreign remittances accounts for over 20% of Nigeria's GDP right now. And it's typically very targeted. It's typically sent to, most of the time, people in need. As opposed to government spending in Nigeria that just ends up
in the pockets of government officials and their cronies.
Yeah, that's the thing keeping Nigeria. If by luck accounts, if 10% of that, if that amount goes down to by 40-50%, if people here and in other places around the world are unable to help sustain their family members. People hate to think. Hate to think of what will happen. Hate to think of what will happen if next day, because just judging by the amount of posts and conversations that I had on social media platforms, I hate to think of what will happen if the elections come next year and people feel, rightly or wrongly, I don't know, it hasn't happened yet, I'm just saying, and people feel like they were robbed, or as typically is the case in Nigerian elections, it was fraudulent to the core. I hate to think of what will happen. I don't feel like if that kind of thing happens, people are going to be like, all right, man, you know, I don't feel so. I feel it's that severe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People are that desperate.
Mm-hmm. Now, the point that you made earlier, that this is the first time This is the very first time in my living memory when even people who are very little are bringing out their quote-unquote widow's mite and offering it because of a sense of urgency and of desperation. Nigeria has been brought to a place of perhaps irreversible damage, okay? Irreversible disaster, okay? Buhari's administration has left a shell of a country. Not that he inherited a robust country by any means, because some people think that Jonathan Obasanjo left a robust country. Nigeria has been sick for a while, okay? But Buhari has particularly brought the country to the edge of disaster, which is, you know, so we're sort of this far away from the kind of disorder that very few countries have seen. And so we're used to politicians spending money, buying up votes. And in a lot of ways, in this electoral season, we're seeing some of that clearly in the two parties, the two major political parties' primaries, presidential primaries, right? It was money, an obscene amount of money that was given to delegates, sometimes $15,000, $20,000, handed to delegates in order to vote for the candidates who ultimately won the ticket. And so I think that Nigerian youth have seen this at a time when oil production, oil revenue in the country is inconsequential. You know, you and I see Europe and America making dramatic gestures, moving dramatically toward a non-fossil fuel future. And so very soon, even with the most massive reserves of oil, crude oil, we may find a situation where the rest of the world says to us, okay, drink it. Drink your oil if you want. We're not interested. And so we're dealing with a situation where the Nigerian government is literally, as we said a few podcasts ago, literally printing money to pay salaries. Printing money. So if some Nigerians, because I think that most Nigerians, maybe not most, but many Nigerians have a clear view of the mess in which their country is mired. But those who don't have better wake up to the fact that it doesn't get worse than this. That a country which has little productive capacity apart from that oil that it sells, and of course, you know, we have Hollywood, which is private sector, music industry, which is private sector. But in terms of public revenue, Nigeria is not doing well at all. Okay. So I agree with what you just said, that if young people from all over the country, and it looks like with every day there are more and more young Nigerians who are enlisting in this obedient movement. And I'll speak about in a minute about why the source of my hope in this movement. But if young people invest in this movement and they have a sense that the candidate they backed won, but his victory is stolen, I think that I don't think that there'll be any safe spaces for politicians, sort of the traditional politicians in Nigeria, or for anybody else. I think that Nigeria will be a very sorry space indeed.
Yeah.
Having said this, I'm not saying that automatically Peter Obi is going to win. I don't know that. Campaigns haven't even begun, right? So it is only when campaigns begin that we'll take a real measure. Sort of, I like what Obi said, which is when the CNN interviewer asked him about him being Igbo and how is he going to sort of transcend the ethnic and religious and other considerations in Nigeria. And Obi said that, say, candidate, that the people of the North don't buy, you know, bread or anything at a cheaper price. They don't have good roads. They don't have anything. So in other words, misery and destitution in Nigeria is a general thing. Everybody feels it. And part of what has brought Nigeria to this sorry pass is this politics in the past of believing that it's somebody from my religious group or somebody from my ethnic group who should go there, right? When in the end, these people don't care for you. You know, they care ultimately for their own pockets. And so it may well be that there is depth to this movement. We don't know it yet. It may simply be a lot of youthful dreamers who hope to overthrow the system, that perhaps the system is too deeply entrenched for their effort. We're going to find out, right? But if the young men and women in this movement, which is a carryover from NSAS, believe that they have recruited enough Nigerians to secure their candidate's victory, and that victory is stolen, I think that it would be their reaction would be unimaginable.
Well, I mean, it is. Having said that, there's still. I mean, first things first, is seeing how the campaign goes, seeing what happens. I don't think I'll say it, and I've said it, and I'll keep saying it. I don't think Obi is the solution to fix Nigeria. I don't. It's a better option, don't get me wrong, than Tinubu, Atiku, Kwan Kwaso, any of these other Halloween creatures that are out there running for presidency or something.
Halloween creatures.
Any of them, but at the end of the day, Nigeria is, it's damaged. But maybe with people that want to forge a national identity of some sort, when you go back in history, in places, nations, wherever, people want to forge an entity, and that typically is the beginning of something from somewhere. It might take 100 years, who knows? But when people decide that we want to, or they want to form an entity, if you go back in history and give you so many examples, eventually, people start forming an entity. Or people would have to decide that, do they want an entity? Because we've never decided that. The British came in, I was watching a lady have this conversation, and I used to actually be in rooms with her on Clubhouse, and she was talking about, it was very like, yeah, colonialism is not Nigeria's problem, blah, 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 blah. Like, to some degree, she has a point there. Oh, not Nigeria, sorry. She's French. She's actually, is it French or the Senegalese French? I can't remember how it goes. I think Senegalese French. one of those people where their parents left them back in Senegal and to France and came to pick them up and all that. And
is this like this woman who is an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that lady. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I saw something she did with Jordan Peterson.
Yes, that one. Yeah. So she okay, did with Peterson. She did with Lex Fridman.
Yes.
And you know, I was like, yeah, to some degree, she's right. You know, a lot of things largely are in the hands of the natives, but to some degree, you have to a broader degree, you have countries that have been put together with the sole purpose of them never being able to stand up. You have mortal enemies. In some cases, all gobbled up into one. You had the British coming in the middle of the Hausa Fulani, end of the Darfurio Jihad, where they take over the Hausa states, which most people don't know were actually matriarchal.
Matriarchal.
You know, at the time we took over them. And he had all those, you know, people that don't if you know, you know the stories, or you haven't heard of people like Queen Amina and all those kind of people. So they get taken over, and there's that dynamic, there's that struggle that was highlighted in the documentary, Bandits of Zamfara, that is still going on there. So you have all these people, and that's just one example, like in Nigeria, for the microcosm. Mm-hmm. You have all this, you know, and they've never decided if they can even be a country together in all sincerity. And if they can, do they want to?
Yeah.
So two separate questions. So you need to ask these questions. Like, you have these dynamics. And as you have the northern things happening, you have the ones in the south and nobody cares for each other. The people in the south, the ethnic groups will call each other pejorative names. They'll call the people in the north pejorative names. They will lump everybody together. Or in some cases in the south, they'll separate themselves out. I am not Igbo. Mm. It's one of those common things in the south. Well, you would tell them, well, historically, you know, like, no, I am not Igbo. You know. So all this to say, the country, you know, if people, you know, the people or the leaders or the karma or whatever it is, decides to give the country a chance to look at itself and ask itself that question, you know, it'd be great. But we are not there. We're going to see what's going to happen. I think the Obasanjo era was one time where it could have happened. It didn't. I think the Babangida / Abacha era was another time. It could have happened. It didn't. Abreu conference was one time it actually kind of was at least something. They end up killing it off. So first things first, let's see how the campaign goes. Before we talk about all that stuff, but main thing is see how the campaign goes, see where the ducks lie.
Mm-hmm.
I think Obi is a better candidate than the other people, and maybe there'll be an opportunity to decide if we should stay together, have a plebiscite, and run away from each other.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know where I stand emotionally. My stance is that Nigeria is so damaged that we can't assume that we want to stay together. And at any rate, that there is fundamental reimagination of the space that needs to happen. You know, emotionally, I want Nigeria to stay together if it can be managed, but it can't stay together under the terms of its present existence. It cannot stay together when citizens don't feel at home in all parts of Nigeria, when the place is overrun by violence, where there are so many grievances all over the country, and people feel that the best way to actualize themselves is to remove themselves from this behemoth, you know, called Nigeria, and to reconstitute themselves along ethnic or clannish lines or whatever. So I had said that Nigeria needs a panel of a rescue panel, really, of experts in the different areas who will begin to reimagine the different sectors if we decide to stay together and determine the terms of this coexistence. But it looks like we're moving inevitably in the direction of next year's elections. My hope is that somehow, if the elections hold, that they will hold in an atmosphere of relative, at least relative, violence-free calm. And if they do, that the elections should be transparent, should be credible, should be free of the kinds of technical glitches and technical that fraud, quite honestly, that have become trademarks of past elections in Nigeria. But there's, you know, you made the point that you know, that you have questions about Obi as the, you know, of course, a lot of people see Obi as the savior of Nigeria. I have profound misgivings, but I will also say that in the company of the two other presidential candidates, that he is by far the most attractive candidate. But here is where I said I ultimately was heartened by, you know, what happened on CNN. It was actually in the word of, again, this young woman, and I go back to her because what she said sort of struck me powerfully. And this young woman, let me see if I can find it. She did say something like, let me see if I can find what she said. Yeah, here it is. She says, "We harnessed that NSAR's pain, that energy, and said we're not just going to let this die. It's not really about Peter Obi. Definitely Peter Obi is a quote-unquote poster child for good governance. But it's about us Nigerians. When do we start to speak up for ourselves? When do we start to speak up for ourselves?" So what I think is that if Peter Obi wins the presidency, if it happens that he wins the presidency, that Obi cannot govern without a vital sense that this was not his victory. This is a victory, a collective victory indeed, of the young people who mobilized for him. And therefore, that ultimately, whatever Obi's political weaknesses and deficiencies, that he cannot but be compelled to govern in the interests of the young people who worked and who are working to actualize his presidential ambitions. So that in the end, he's going to understand that this is not about him, that every single young person who is running, who is supporting him, sees him or herself as running, as having a vital stake in this race. I think that that's the best guarantee that Obi is not going to slip into the usual easy path of Nigerian politicians who sometimes will give good rhetoric or dull rhetoric, but then govern in a way that is self-centered and self-serving. So that sort of is what I see as as the antidote against the potential betrayal by an Obi presidency, that the young people, if they get him the presidency, won't sit idly and allow him to do anything but do what they want him to do. And as I've continued to say, to the extent that Nigeria continues to retain any residue of hope, that residue of hope rests entirely, or if you like, mostly, with the young people who have been much betrayed, who are broken by just the constant destruction, the serial destruction of Nigeria. But ultimately, that in their ingenuity and energy and passion, in their creativity, look at what young people are doing in music, look at what they are doing in film, look at what they are doing just in different areas of endeavor, despite the fact that their country has been just broken. Left to them, they're going to bring and impose on any president that they bring into power. And, you know, I think that clearly they're most excited by Obi. If they bring Obi into office, I think the young people are going to, as it were, stage a sit-in so that they are front and center and at the heart of his government. And the very first sign of his moving away from the steam, from the momentum, from the energy that produced his presidency, that young people are going to give him hell, and deservedly so.
Well, we hope that it would not be in like the case of Obama's presidency, where young people piled him in and
he went corporate
immediately from the very first second from his bailout. So, the disaster directly led to all kinds of consequences. Mm-hmm. That being said,
I think it's been a bracing, exciting conversation. As I said, I'm looking forward to the other candidates. What Obi clearly is doing, and we have to give him credit, is that Obi is raising the bar for the other candidates, right? Mm-hmm. Since Obi has gone to CNN, has gone also to Nigerian media, to, as it were, state, make a case for himself. I'm looking forward to hearing Atiku and Tinubu step up as well and make their own case. And if they have better answers to the problems of Nigeria, I hope they have the opportunity from CNN to go and make that case.
All right.
So thank you very much again, viewers, for listening in on this episode. And we look forward to welcoming you again next week. Have a brilliant rest of the week.
See you next week. All
okay.
Right.
Okay. Bye-bye now. All right.